Today's program is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. Did you know that Wisconsin wins more national and international cheese awards than any other state or country? To learn more, visit wisconsincheese.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome to Feast Your Ears. I'm Harry Rosenblum. I love to talk with people about what they do and how it influences their personal food stories. This is a show about people, life, and food. Today's episode 101 of Feast Your Ears. I'm a little tired today. I got up at like 4 a.m. Chicago time and got on a plane and came back to New York. Always nice to return home, though, after being in a hotel room for like a week. So excited I get to cook dinner tonight. Be nice. So today, joining me on the show, I'm really excited. I have Allie Rosen here with me. She has just had a awesome book come out. It came out yesterday, right, Allie?
Yeah, yesterday.
It's called Bring It, Tried and True Recipes for Potlucks and Casual Entertaining. So thanks so much for coming over to Roberta's and hanging with me today.
It's my pleasure. As I was saying to you before, I just ate a pizza, so I feel pretty great.
Yeah, we were talking before the show started about how it's you know, a lot of places you go to a studio and maybe there's a bodega downstairs or there's like a you know, halal cart outside.
Right, a sad fruit plate.
Yeah, and if you know, and if it's in television, maybe you have when I worked in TV, we used to call candy salad on the table.
Yeah, definitely.
But it's nice. You get to come to Roberta's, have a pizza.
Yeah.
And we're having a beautiful day in New York.
So, yeah,
you know,
finally.
Late winter, sun. Yeah, we've been having all these storms. So, Allie, your book is all about potlucks, and you have a show called Potluck with Allie, right?
Yeah, it's no coincidence. I love making other people bring me food, I guess.
So what was the first thing you ever brought to a potluck?
You know, when I was a kid, my mom had this cookbook that was like one of those like really 80s like chocolate books, like, you know, like a death by chocolate kind of book. And I made these.
Did it have a chocolate fountain on the cover? That's what I'm picturing.
It had like, you know, it's so funny that you say that because it had like a ganache with like a dripping chocolate. Like it was really hilarious. And they had this recipe for chocolate truffles. So I used to bring them everywhere, and it was so messy because you'd like roll them in cocoa powder, or you'd roll them in like, you know, at that time people loved like that coconut, you know, that like fake coconut.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I used to bring, like, that was my thing. Like I would bring chocolate truffles. I was like 7 and I thought I was like very sophisticated. So there actually is a chocolate truffle in Bring It. That's a chocolate sesame truffles that uses tahini. And when I was making it, I was like, oh, my 7-year-old self is so happy right now.
Well, yesterday on Instagram, you posted a really cute clipping from the Post and Courier paper from 95 with a picture of you making cookies, right?
Yes. I almost didn't post it because the recipes there look like they're really bad and that they probably wouldn't work. So I don't know. You know, the Post and Courier now has won a Pulitzer Prize, and you know, Hannah Raskin just got nominated for 2 Beard Awards today.
Yeah.
So I'm very happy that the Post and Courier has really grown beyond publishing the recipes of a 9-year-old just for the sake of it. But yeah, I mean, this cookbook is really a long time in the making. I've been cooking my whole life.
So were those your first published recipes?
Those were my first published recipes. Yeah. I was trying to remember like why they, you know, even published it.
But right.
I'm happy that they, you know, I have it on like a little plaque in my office as kind of a reminder of like, you know, sometimes it takes a while to get where you want to go.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. So tell me a little bit about how you went from that first published recipe in 95 in Post and Courier.
Very impressive.
To Potluck with Allie now. I mean, there were some stops along the way at Fox hosting TV and...
Yeah, I've had a lot of stops along the way. You know, I loved food and I always wrote recipes. I always cooked at home. I actually, you know, my first job, which, you know, like, let's call it a mentorship, was I followed around the owner of a restaurant group in Charleston. They do Slightly North Abroad and High Cotton. And, you know, I sort of realized very early on that I wasn't really cut out for restaurants. And so I just kind of thought, okay, well, this is just not for me. Like, there's no career path here if I don't want to be in food, if I don't want to be in restaurants. So I actually went a totally different route, and I wanted to do news production. So I was a page at NBC. I worked for the nightly news. I was a local news reporter for New York One, and I did all of that, and I just started to realize, like, this is not what I want to be doing with my life.
Also not what you wanted to do. Yeah.
Right. I mean, you know, I've been very good at figuring out what I don't want to do, and I moved to India for a year to work on a documentary, and along the way, I just really, you know, this, I sound like someone from Eat, Pray, Love, but I really, you know, it's in taking a step back from kind of New York and all the things that happen here where you think, like, this is my career, and I have to move forward, and, you know, I have this great job, and, you know, I was like, you know, I really want to do something in food. And when I came back, I kind of realized I had all these skills for video production and, you know, being on air and doing all of that, and that I could combine those skills into food, which was really, has always been my greatest love. And what was very lucky for me at that time, which was probably 2011, you know, today we have a lot of really great food video online.
Yeah.
At the time there really wasn't.
It's true.
And,
yeah.
And so I applied for a job at a website called The Daily Meal, and they were really trying to hire someone who had a background in food, but they couldn't find anyone who had a background in food and could, you know, shoot and edit and be on camera. So I think I got the job out of just like default, like, oh, well, I guess we have to give it to this girl.
Right place,
and,
right time.
Yeah, I mean, and it was funny because my boss there was Coleman Andrews, who started Savoir Magazine.
Yeah.
And he said that to me. He was like, yeah, we wanted somebody with more food experience, but, you know, they couldn't work a camera. So here you are. And I was like, great. So I just got really lucky. Like today, you know, if you graduated from school today and you didn't have a degree in food and film, making and all these things, you know, I just have gotten very, you know, I've worked hard, but I sort of got lucky in that I was in the right place at the right time. And
yeah.
So I did that for a few years. And then I started doing the TV show on NYC Life, which we're now about to start our 10th season. We do
congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. We do two seasons a year, which is kind of nuts. And yeah, I used to do a show on Fox as well. And I write and, you know, so it's really just been, I've been so lucky that I was able to kind of turn the thing that I always really wanted to do into my actual career.
Yeah, no, that's great. So let's go back to the book. Let's talk a little bit more about potlucks. So mm-hmm. with all of your experience in food and, you know, you've done some other interesting traveling related to food, and we'll get to that maybe a little later in the show. What led you to feel like there was a place for an entire book about potlucks?
Yeah, you know, it's in working in food, I spend a lot of time thinking about sort of how things change, how people transition the way we eat, what we do, the way, you know, the way we consume content, as we were just saying, with
yeah.
food videos. You know, it's sort of has struck me that in, you know, the past decade or so, I think we've really, we talk about food more, but we're less formal about food. And
yeah.
I think that when people have dinner parties, they're much more apt to let people bring things, you know, to say like, oh, what can I bring? And
yeah.
you'll actually be allowed to bring something beyond
sure.
like a bottle of wine.
Yeah. Or some ice cream.
I'm very good at bringing wine also.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's really, we've sort of changed the dinner party thing. Like when I was a kid and my grandmother would have a dinner party, it was like she would make everything. The table would be set perfectly. There'd be an exact number of seats. Everybody would show up on time. Nothing would be, you know, and that was the way people hosted. And
yeah.
now I think we all host a little more casually and, you know, everybody cooks. Everybody likes talking about food. We all maybe talk about food too much. So
probably.
The idea of bringing things to dinners has just become part of our everyday thing. So, you know, there's a lot of content around potlucks and like casserole dishes and kind of this old idea of like what a potluck is. And I just got really interested in this idea of like actually most of the dinner parties we're having now on some level are a potluck, you know. So I really wanted to, I named my company Potluck because I love that idea, you know, the show is all about bringing everyone to the table. So that's where the name came from. And, you know, I have in the foreword of the book that my mom thought it was a terrible idea because
yeah.
she's like, potlucks are horrible. I read that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that was true. She was like, please don't do that. Please don't name your company after a thing everyone hates. And, you know, I just was like, but this, it shouldn't be that way. Like, it's really bringing people together around food is a good thing. So I just got excited about the idea and, you know, started writing recipes, and thankfully my wonderful editor, Kristen, decided to let me do it.
Well, and I mean, I think that the other thing that I really like about the book is that it pushes, I think, it pushes people to think about what it means when someone says, will you come over for dinner and bring something,
yeah.
right, for a potluck, beyond a casserole.
Right.
Or a lasagna or a mac and cheese right. or a salad. Right. I mean, there are some great salads in there, but, you know, I mean, some of the recipes that I thought looked, you know, awesome, and they weren't necessarily recipes that if someone said, hey, I'm having a potluck, would jump into my mind.
Right.
You know, the red wine pasta dish is awesome, and it looks super cool.
Yeah, it's such a fun one.
I mean, what a cool technique. Can you talk a little bit about where that dish came from?
That dish came from, you know, a trip to Italy where I had this pasta, and I was like, oh, it's like a beet pasta or it's something. You know, like I thought it was like dyed in some way, and they said, you know, no, it's actually dyed by cooking it in the wine. Right. It's just red,
yeah.
Which is amazing. And it's been one of my favorite recipes because it really just surprises people and they think it's really complicated and yeah. it's really not. Like you're cooking pasta in water, you can also cook it in wine and it gives it this really earthy flavor. And people have loved it. Actually, Carla Hall, who very kindly wrote a blurb for the book, just cooked it for herself and posted it today. So maybe now people are going to really go for that red wine pasta. But yeah, you know, I just get inspired, as I'm sure you do. Like I eat out a lot and I, you know, am with chefs and cooking and doing segments a lot. So every time I'm with someone, it sparks an idea. And so that pasta kind of came from that. And then the idea, you know, cold pasta, like we've had pasta salad,
yep.
but it doesn't have to have like mayo and yeah. like all this stuff that we think of. Like you can just have cold pasta. And if the ingredients on it are good, I mean, that recipe, it's feta, it's basil, it's pine nuts. It's all really fresh things that do well. You can have that pasta hot,
right.
but if you serve it cold, it's great. Yeah. So why not?
Well, and I also love the idea that, you know, at least I find, I don't know if you find this to be the case, but when we do have a potluck, every year on January 1st, my wife and I throw a chili party.
Nice.
And over the years, it has morphed into this sort of quasi-contest, right. not by our development, but right. by our friends.
Whose is the best?
Exactly. And so everybody's bringing a chili, and there's lots of sort of like chatter among text and, you know, Instagram about who's making chili, and someone is smoking duck for their chili right. and all this stuff. And it's become this kind of de facto, like, fun kind of a contest to be like, what'd you make? How'd
right.
you make it? What'd you mm-hmm. do? And I feel like that's a little bit where we are in the food world, that it's yeah. not, you know, the potluck is not in a church basement with casseroles. It's in your house, right. and people are bringing something that they want to kind of talk about and that they're proud of
right.
and that they want to share.
And it doesn't have to be the same thing. You know, I think that people of other generations had their, like, two or three dishes that was, like, their signature thing.
Yeah.
And that's, oh, Susie brings her brownies every time, and that's so great. And I mean, there's definitely people who still do that.
I mean, I have a friend who brings incredible chocolate chip cookies
right.
every year to the chili party every time he comes over. And that's great. I mean, you know, I feel like sometimes there are people. I mean, Nick, I love spending time with you. But, you know, sometimes
sorry,
I know yeah. we're going to need cookies. And so, right. you know, you get invited
right.
over.
Right. You need that. Yeah, there are some dishes, like for the Super Bowl, there's baked wings in Bring It that I'm obsessed with. And, you know, one year I actually... 2 years ago, I gave everybody food poisoning.
Oh, no.
Because I had the norovirus. Not because of the food
right,
wasn't
right.
cooked. I had the norovirus. I did not
and
know
And so
it.
Everybody got sick because
yes,
of the food you made.
Then yeah. I got the norovirus. And then, shockingly, all my guests got the norovirus. Oh. And the next year, I was like, oh, is anyone going to show up to my Super Bowl party? And everybody did. They're like, well, you know, we just had to have those wings.
Right.
I was like, well, I guess this recipe really has to go in the book if people will show up after getting poisoned.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, you definitely have to have some of those signature things. But it's also fun to try something new and bring new things. And those types of themed parties are always great because it gives people a direction and
yeah.
it gives them inspiration. And, you know, when you say to someone, hey, we're going to do pasta night, everybody bring a different type of pasta, or, hey, let's do chili night, or, you know, things like that, then you give people kind of a chance to try something new, which is actually exciting.
Yeah, you call in the beginning of the book, you talk about the recipes being aspirational and attainable.
Yeah.
Which I guess, does that mean they lie somewhere between like the 11 Madison Park book and the Campbell and the Campbell soup can? Like they're somewhere in the middle?
There? You know, it's more about like I think I really embarrass my husband with this all the time because I like to make things that look really cool and then tell people how easy it was. Like I do it with clothes too, where like last night I was at a party and someone was like, ooh, your dress is so nice. And I was like, oh, I got it at H&M. It was $20.
Right.
And he's like, why don't you just say thanks? You know,
yeah.
like, but I mean, I feel that way about food. Like, it's
sure.
almost like it's better if it was easy, you know, like,
yeah.
oh, you think it's great. And I only spent 30 minutes making
right.
it.
Right.
Like that to me is what you want to bring to a potluck. Because if you've like labored over something for like 8 hours
yeah.
and then you bring it and people just eat it and no one even is like, eh, then
right.
it's so depressing.
yeah.
So, you know, I really tried, you know, this book, I had a lot of ideas for recipes. There were some that I just like kept putting off and because they were complicated. And I kept just thinking like, well, if I don't even want to make this, like, to test it out.
Right,
like,
it doesn't even go in the books.
Yeah, like, who's going to want to do this, you know? So the goal was really to find some of those recipes, you know, like the red wine pasta, where it's, like, it's so easy to make, but people look at it and they're like, wow, that's so cool. So, I mean, the, you know, attainable piece of it is really important. But the aspirational part is also, you don't want to bring something that feels like, you know, just something you whip together for your Tuesday night dinner either.
Right. I mean, you know, you do talk about, you mentioned that people should in fact make their own hummus. I mean, hummus is so ubiquitous now. You can buy perfectly passable hummus at every grocery store.
Yeah.
But there really is something so much better and so much fresher and brighter about making it yourself.
So much better. And I think, you know, this book, like, I like to say I cook in like a judgment-free zone, you know, because there's a whole section at the bottom. There's a recipe for this red pepper hummus. And at the bottom of it, it's like, listen, if you buy the hummus, here's how you can make this. You know, you can still add the peppers. You can still add these things. Like, if you want to buy your hummus, like, no judgment. But I think that there's some things that are so easy. And again, like my recipe, you know, Alon Shaya has a book out that came out yesterday as well. And he and I once had a conversation about hummus where he said I was totally nuts for using canned chickpeas. And I said, you know what, like, I don't have time to, like, let them sit over. I was like, so that's my in-between, right? Like, I'm making it, but I'm not going to, like, buy chickpeas and then soak them for many days.
And then cook them perfectly.
Yeah, and again, like, if you do that and that's your signature thing, then awesome. Like, again, no judgment of that, you know? But it's, I'm always trying to find the way to, like, make things, like, a little bit better, but without being super difficult.
Yeah. So you mentioned traveling to India. And then I noticed looking through some of your social media feed, I saw a picture of a Parmesan cave and a picture of you picking coffee.
Yeah.
So you seem to get into some real interesting stuff when you travel.
Yes, I'm not fun to travel with if you don't like food, because I'll be like, let's go look at this factory. And like my family's like, please just let us go lie on a beach somewhere. I think that we take for granted so much. We talk about food so much and we don't really know a lot about how our food is made. And we don't really think about where it comes from as much as we should. And, you know, for some people, I mean, I did a video a few years ago about breaking down a whole lamb. Like, it wasn't slaughtering the lamb. Mm-hmm. It wasn't taking the skin off. It was like a fully skinned but whole lamb. And then it was just like, this is how it gets broken down. And these are the parts it gets broken down into. And I swear to God, I got more emails of people being like, how dare you show this thing? And I was like, well, I mean, where do you think your lamb, like, what do you think? Like, you think when you get a steak that the cow just like poof into a steak? Yeah. Like, you know, so I really love stories that kind of delve into how we get to where we are. And some of my favorite stories I've been able to cover and look at have been around that. I mean, the cheese caves was a fun, I mean, again, that was like me on vacation, like a total nut job. A few years ago, I went to Modena. I met Massimo Bottura, who's the chef from Osteria Francescana that now everyone is totally obsessed with because he's the most delightful human on
the planet.
Oh, he's amazing.
We did an event with him years ago.
Yeah, he's like, and, you know, I met him, probably like 2011, 2012, and his wife and I went to the same high school, so we, like, she's American, and, you know, we sort of bonded over this thing, and he kept, every like 6 months, he would send me an email and be like, when are you coming to Modena? And finally I was like, how stupid am I that I'm not doing this?
Yeah,
so I planned this entire trip around like eating lunch at Francescana, and, you know, and his wife, Laura, very, very kindly gave us, I was like, okay, and I want to go to like see how balsamic is made, and I want to see how Parmesan cheese is made. And, you know, it's that region, you know, Emilia Romagna it's becoming a much more popular tourist destination, but it's really a little more under the radar because it's right next to Tuscany, and Tuscany is, the landscape is more beautiful. Yeah. And, you know, their food and wine isn't so bad either, but
it's okay.
It's fine. Yeah, but I mean, so many of the things that we love come from Emilia Romagna. So I've been very lucky that, when I travel, I seek out the, you know, I'm just very grateful that my husband likes that stuff too, even though he works in consulting and has nothing to do with food. But because I'm exhausting for other people to go on trips with.
We're going to take a short break and hear from one of our sponsors here at Heritage Radio. And when we come back, I want to talk about your son, Guy.
From your chalice chest. stand by my hand to you.
Today's program was brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. What do you think of when you hear Wisconsin cheese? For me, I think cheese curds. Delicious, fresh and squeaky cheese curds. Or deep fried cheese curds. Cheese curds literally any way, anytime, any place. I think about Andy Hatch and Uplands Cheese, the farmstead cheese company behind Pleasant Ridge Reserve. I think of delicious stinky Limburger and its long storied history. I think of Dunbarton Blue, made by master cheesemaker Chris Raleigh. I think of Ross Grand Cru Sirchois, which was named 2016's World Championship Cheese, and Satori's Black Pepper Bellavitano, the 2017 U.S. Championship Cheese. Wisconsin produces the world's best cheese, with lush grasslands and a glacial water supply that produce the very best milk. Fourth-generation cheesemakers combine old-world tradition with new ideas and the highest standards to make innovative cheeses that win more awards than any other state or country. To learn more, visit wisconsincheese.com.
Welcome back to Feast Your Ears. I'm Harry Rosenblum, and joining me in the studio today, I have Allie Rosen here, who hosts Potluck with Allie and has just her book, Bring It, Tried and True Recipes for Potlucks and Casual Entertaining, just came out yesterday. So if you're just joining us before the break, we were talking about some of Allie's traveling and a lot of the sort of dragging her family around to visit places. So now you have a toddler, you have a son, so now you get to drag him around.
Yes.
To see this stuff.
He is very draggable at this age. Yeah, I've made him. Well, right now he's obsessed with, he thinks he's been a lot more places than he has because we have all these like photos, travel photos. And so, I tell him like that he's been there with me if I was pregnant with him.
Right.
So he'll tell people, he'll be like, I've been to Myanmar. And it's like, yeah, but you haven't.
Sort of, yeah.
Yeah, like you were like a zygote, but okay. Yeah.
My son who's four loves to, he loves to come out with things and be like, oh, I was born in Rhode Island, which is not true. He was born in New York. He'll just like, he pops out with all this stuff. And very similarly, he'll be like, oh yeah, remember that time, Dad, when I was in Japan?
Yeah. And you're like, sure.
And I'm like, you weren't in Japan. We FaceTimed when I was in Japan. What doesn't,
He was there though.
He thinks he was. He certainly does. Does Guy like to eat?
Oh my God. I keep saying, yeah. So if anyone out there wants to produce a show about a hilarious toddler eating, yeah. That's my next concept. He's insane. I mean, I have a friend, if you want to see the adventures of Guy, I don't post about him a lot, but my friend Alyssa Goldman does. And she will we'll go out to lunch and she will have like an entire Insta story because he eats everything. And
cool.
I don't know why he decided, why I got blessed with a kid who eats everything, but he eats like oyster, he likes like raw oysters. He'll eat whatever. And the first like real pasta that he had, we took a trip to Italy. If you can't tell, I'm a little obsessed with Italy. I have a mild issue with it. We went to the area around like Como and we had lunch at Villa d'Este, which is this like famous, and we called them. I was like, listen, we have a toddler, can we bring him? And they were like, oh, absolutely, bring him. And we got there and they had this like high chair that looked like a throne. I mean, it was like ridiculous. And they were like, we will bring out some butter pasta for the young sir. And I was like, what is that? And they brought it out on this like silver platter.
That's so cool. I mean, that's really cool.
It was really nice. Yeah, Italy is a great place to travel with kids because they are so kid friendly. But yeah, he had this like butter pasta, which we'd never given him before. And his face, we have this like series of photos of him, just like the pure joy of butter and pasta. So yeah, we take him everywhere. I mean, he eats everything.
That's awesome.
Which is lucky. Yeah. People are always like, no, he doesn't. I'm like, all right, here, I'll send you a bunch of photos. I have a whole section on my Instagram. You have those like highlights now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's one that's called Guy Eating.
Nice.
For anyone
definitely. Yeah.
It's hilarious. Yeah. He's a funny kid.
People can find you on Instagram and Twitter at Allie_Rosen.
Yeah. Allie Rosen was taken by a bikini fitness model. So I have
that.
Does
she still use it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. She got married. She changed her name. She kept the handle. I'm very,
that's a bummer.
It's very sad. Yeah. So I have Allie_Rosen.
All right. So you mentioned in the questionnaire that I send out to guests before the show that one of your pet peeves related to food is snobbery.
Yeah.
And that you like fine dining, but you don't like things being fancy. And, it's interesting. When you mentioned taking Guy to the restaurant and them being very kid friendly.
Yeah.
It's something that I have always, I bristle at that stuff. And, recently for a big
big celebratory dinner. My wife and I went to Le Bernardin. It was incredible. And, you know, thanks, Eric. It was really great. But I don't like being forced to wear a dinner jacket when I eat.
Yeah.
I don't like eating in a jacket. I wear a suit sometimes. I like going to weddings. I like wearing a suit. I like dressing up. But I'm not comfortable eating wearing that.
Yeah.
And so going to restaurants that's one of my pet peeves. Similarly, if you're required to wear a jacket, I'm like, why? Why? I mean, I get it. I should wear a shirt, right? I'm not going to come in there wearing flip-flops.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to come in with a muscle shirt. But I don't want to wear a jacket.
But you also just don't know who people are. Like I sat next to the manager of Del Posto on a plane once, coming back from the Beard Awards when they were in Chicago, and we were chatting about this, and he said, you know, that the CEO of a tech company that I will not name came into Del Posto once wearing a t-shirt, and, you know, that this is, you know, they accommodated him, and they put him sort of in an area, whatever, but they didn't shame him, and I think that was such a lovely story of, like, this person is about to spend a lot of money, they have a lot of business, here they are, like, let's serve them. And obviously you want to be respectful of the restaurant that you're going to, but you don't want to shame people. And I think, you know, for me, I spend so much of my time interviewing chefs and with chefs and at restaurants. And I just think it's the hospitality industry. And I find that so many places it's like, we're just going to be snobby. And for what? Like the whole point of going out to eat is to have a good time. So there are really great restaurants that I just won't even go to anymore because they're so rude. And it's kind of like, okay, well, I'm spending a lot of money. This is a special occasion. I get that you guys are, you know, highly rated. I get that you're busy, but I've come here to spend my hard earned money.
Yep.
And I want you to be nice. I'm going to be nice to you. You know, you can be nice to me. And with kids, I mean, it's really interesting. You know, there's so many restaurants. I mean, I always call ahead. I never take him to dinner late. You know, we do a lot of lunches.
Right.
And things like that. And, you know, I'm always, it's, and I will always tip more because he leaves, you know, a little pile of things and everyone has to be accommodating. But I mean, you know, and also we don't, if he starts screaming or something, we take him out. I guess
of course.
Some parents don't do that. But yeah, I think that the restaurant industry really, and I think this is why a lot of fine dining is having difficulties because people want to eat great food, but they want to be comfortable. Yeah. They want to be happy and feel taken care of.
Is there something, to go back to potlucks, is there something that if someone brings to a potluck, you secretly roll your eyes?
Store-bought guacamole.
Okay.
That's the thing is, you can buy store-bought guacamole and then add stuff to it.
Yeah.
You know, you can cut up some red onions and you can squeeze a lime into it and you can chop some cilantro and, you know, make it your own. But that's one of those things where it's like, so easy to make, buying like bread or something. If you're in charge of bringing cheese and some bread, please don't necessarily make the bread, right? Please buy that.
Right. You know?
But I think there's some things that people buy where you're like, oh, this is so easy. You could just do it yourself or make it yourself. You're, you know, a little personal. I mean, I get it. We're all busy. So, you know, if you're going to bring something that you didn't make, make it like a great cheese or a really interesting wine or something that it still feels personal rather than like, oh, I got this at the bodega downstairs.
Right.
Sorry.
Where did you do the photography for the book?
Oh, man. The photography for the book is I can't say enough about it. The photographer was Noah Fex.
I love Noah.
Who is one of the most talented people. But, you know, you see that in his photos. But what you don't see and what I hope comes through the photos is he is the most genuine human on the planet and just such enthusiasm and such positivity.
Yep.
And it really shines that, you know, this book, it was so important to me that the photos were approachable, that everything could be eaten. You know, we did not, you know, there's no tweezers here. It was all we ate all of the food afterwards.
No Aquanet sprayed on for a perfect
Right. So, you know, the stylist Ashton Keefe and Noah really understood that this was, you know, there's a lot of cookbooks lately that are all you know, they're either so fancy or it's everything is sepia toned in my beautiful house that I have in Hudson, New York,
right.
Or, you know, these things that are really beautiful, but are feel intimidating. And I was listen, I don't know if it sounds lame or if I'm not cool, but I just want it to be fun. I want it to be bright. I want it to feel like a party that I would have, you know, which, yeah, I'm not hip, but I have fun. So, you know, and they just got it. And Noah, I mean, he has another cookbook coming out this spring as well, the LA cookbook, and the photos for that are totally different. You know, he really can capture the book, and, you know, he has a great book called Toast Water, that he also just published. And, you know, he also a long time ago had The Way We Ate.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's just so talented. And so I was like so thrilled that he could do the photos because, you know, people don't pick up a cookbook because they like read the head notes and said, oh, this is really hilarious. Like they pick it up because they're like, wow, I want to eat this thing in this photo.
Yep.
So, you know.
And I think they often, you know, will choose recipes based on that too.
Absolutely. Oh God, that was the big, you know, it's like choosing between your children, you know, yeah. Most, unless you are photographing your own cookbook, which a lot of bloggers do, and sure. Is one of the benefits of buying a cookbook from one of your favorite bloggers. You know, if you're buying a cookbook from someone like me who can cook and not take photographs, you'll get about 40 or 50, you know, photos out of the 100 recipes. So it was like, oh my God, it was so hard to choose. But Ashton Keefe, who styled it, you know, I had like 45. They said, pick 40. And I was like, how about 45? Yeah. And she was like, I will get this for you. And we will, you know, she just ran it like a tight ship and we got all the photos. And yeah, so, you know, yeah, cook some of the recipes that don't have photos. They're great too. Yeah.
But, yeah. But I do have to say, sitting here looking at it, the recipe that is kind of the star of the cover, which is a tomato and corn and feta salad.
Yeah.
Is like what I want, right? Like as like spring is coming yeah. And like that salad tastes like, you know, in my brain, I'm like, oh, it's the end of July.
I'm so glad that you
taste
say
it. And I just
that.
Like, I look yeah. at it like that's what I want. I mean, I've also, like I said, I've been on the road for a week.
Right. So you
I
haven't want fresh cooked. Things.
Yeah, exactly. I want something that is like fresh and bright and is not an egg sandwich.
Yeah. When they sent me the cover, it's actually hilarious because, you know, as the author, you actually think that you are, you know, you have some control over something, which you actually have no control because the publisher, you know, they've done this so many times yeah. and they know what they're doing. And they sent me this cover. And they said, what do you think? And I was like, oh, well, I don't know if, you know, a corn salad is really what we should have on the cover. And I had this whole long email about, like, why, whatever. And, you know, and then my editor was like, oh, well, that's really nice. But the buyers for Amazon and Barnes & Noble really love it. So it's already over. We were just trying to be nice. You know, it's fine.
It's so funny. I had almost the exact same email string with Vinegar Revival right. where what, you know, the photograph we had talked about being the cover of that book was a photograph of all these different bottles of vinegar with different coloration and yeah. You know, and then they sent me that, and then they sent me the one that ended up being the cover, which is a picture right. of a bunch of pickles. And I said, but it's not a pickle book. It's a book right. about vinegar. And my editor said, yeah, well, it just looks nicer. It's a, right. you know, the other one looked like a drink book.
Right.
And the this looks like a food book.
Buy stuff. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's funny. So yeah, Kristen always says now we're on Team Corn. Yeah. She's like, I'm getting you onto Team Corn. And now I love it because it's true. It's like, it's because the cover has a number of recipes. It's yeah. not like it's like, here's a corn book. But it is. It's one of those recipes that I make. Like I've just been making forever. My grandmother was lived in New Hampshire. And so it was like the thing that we would make. And, you know, your son thinks he was born in Rhode Island. My yeah. mom was born in Rhode yeah. Island. So we go there every summer to be with her family. And, you know, this past summer I made that salad like people. And it was funny because I had like we did this like fish tacos. I had all this stuff and everybody just kept being like this salad. And yeah. I was like, oh, I was like, why did I spend so much time on like 7 different sauces for your stupid fish tacos when all you guys want is some grilled corn?
Right.
But it's just, you know, sometimes the simplest things are the best.
Absolutely. Well, I wanted to call out a couple of other recipes that at least sort of jumped out to me. I really like the buttermilk broccoli salad in the book.
Yeah.
And I really the vinegar chicken and tomatoes for obvious reasons, having written a book about vinegar.
I was going to say, yeah, vinegar forever.
The mustard roasted carrots look really good. And the chai brownies I thought was a really interesting recipe because, I mean, it, you know, chocolate brownie is such a, you know,
yeah.
I mean, not that there's nothing wrong with a chocolate brownie.
Yeah, good chocolate brownies.
Like but heaven. I'm not a super dessert person, so like, for me, yeah. a brownie has to be really good.
It's funny. I am not a dessert person. And that, I think, is probably why you see so many fruit-based desserts, because I'm not a huge sweet tooth. And some of these recipes are, like, the s'mores bars are, like, a sweetness bomb. They're yeah. awesome. But the chai brownie is, yeah, that was one that I tested over and over again because, you know, it's like when you're dealing with something as divisive as cardamom, you know, which is kind of what, you know, the brownies are basically sort of a play on the flavors of chai tea.
Right.
And, you know, I kept making them. I mean, I probably tweaked the, like, amount, you know, like, so many times because, you know, people would. And finally, when I got, like, the people who loved it to say, okay, there was still enough, and the people who didn't to say,
right.
yeah, that was, like, such a. So that's one I'm really proud of. And there's no photo of that one. So I'm very glad that you said that one because I love it. It's, but, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's a really special brand. People bite into it, and they're like, ooh, what is this? You know, which I think is kind of the best thing for a dessert, that people think they know what it is.
Right.
Yeah, so I love that one.
Cool. Well, we're just about out of time, but I want to make sure to ask what events you have coming up for the book.
Oh man, you know, I'm really horrible. I'm not doing very many signings because I'm deathly afraid of having a signing where nobody shows up is the honest truth about it. But I do have if you buy the book and you email bringitcookbook@gmail.com, I will send you a personalized book plate.
Oh,
so that is my thing I'm doing in lieu of signings because I'm, because I have a toddler and I'm sad and I don't want to. if you buy People Magazine this week, you will see one of the recipes from Bring It
awesome.
In there. And, I'm going to be on the Home and Family show on Hallmark in April and doing a few other things. So yeah, if you follow me on social media, if I get the courage to do any signings, I will let everyone know.
Sounds great. Well, thanks, Allie, so much. And everybody should
Thank
check
you.
Out potluckwithallie.com.
Thank you.
And check that out and go out and, you know, bring it.
Yeah, right? Bring it. Exclamation point. Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, it was really fun. Thanks, everybody, for listening to Feast Your Ears today. Big thank you to David Tatasciore for engineering the show. You can find Feast Your Ears, as well as lots of other great shows, at heritageradionetwork.org, on Stitcher, iTunes, and now on Spotify. Please take a moment to like the show on any of those platforms. If you do, in fact, like it, you can reach me at email, harry@thebrooklynkitchen.com, and you can find me on social media at TheFoodBaller. Talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.